You're listening to the Cloud Lounge Podcast, a show about business, technology, and all that jazz. Brought to you by Soft Landing, a leading IT service provider in Canada. Let's get started. Here's your host, Zeeshan Randhawa.
Welcome to the Cloud Lounge Podcast. I'm your host, Zeeshan. In this podcast, we're going to talk about surviving a cyber attack. Yes, you heard right. How to survive, not just prevent a cyber attack, but how to survive. Because as much as we'd like to think otherwise, no one is immune to cybercrime, and the statistics are alarming. How probable is it that your business will fall victim to a cyber attack? Well, surprisingly high. Consider this. There has been a 38% surge in cyber attacks in 2022 alone. And cyber attacks have increased by 7% in Q1 2023 compared to the same period last year, with each organization facing an average of just over 1,200 attacks per week. It only takes a minuscule vulnerability in your cybersecurity infrastructure or a single misguided click on an innocent-looking link to provide cybercriminals with entry into your business, potentially exposing sensitive data. While some cyber attacks can swiftly incapacitate your networks, others may lurk undetected for weeks or even months. Regardless of their speed, all cyber attacks share a common trait: the potential to inflict severe damage on your business, both financially and in terms of reputation, which may be really challenging to recover from. There are no guarantees or foolproof plans for protecting your business from many types of cybercrime that exist. The best you can do is really establish robust security protocols and educate your employees in order to minimize your risks. But what if, despite your best efforts, you still find yourself in the unfortunate situation of being hacked? What do you do then? How do you respond, recover, and rebuild? That's what we're going to explore today with the help of our special guest. Our guest today is Alvin. And Alvin is an expert at cybersecurity with a national managed service provider serving across Canada. Welcome to the Cloud Lounge, Alvin, and thank you for joining us.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, Alvin, could you start by telling us how you help organizations with cybersecurity?
As an MSP, cybersecurity is the focus. It's the head of the arrow. We obviously do different types of services for organizations, ranging from migrations to the cloud, modernization of IT infrastructure. But for the purpose of the podcast and cybersecurity, what we do is we assist organizations in enhancing their cybersecurity posture through a multifaceted approach. We provide a range of services, including risk assessments, security consulting, managed security services, and even incident response. Our goal is to help our clients identify vulnerabilities, implement robust security measures, and respond effectively to cyber threats, ensuring the protection of their digital assets and sensitive data. The core of the reason why we do all of this is really to reduce risk to organizations and the people involved in that organization. So protecting things like jobs or the livelihood of people. When you're in a cyber attack, you can potentially not receive a paycheck because systems are down. So you're going to go home. So in the end, what we're really trying to do is protect the businesses and the people that are all involved in there.
So Alvin, I know cyber threats are kind of ever evolving. Would you be able to highlight what are some of the most common types of cyber attacks that organizations face today?
So the most common that we're seeing in terms of cyber attacks are account takeovers or business email compromises. They're extremely effective because they rely on a human component. So phishing, definitely top on the list. The other type of attack is something related to web browsing, general web browsing, browsing to what you we think are legitimate sites, but are infected and designed in order to either scrape credentials or potentially put a dropper onto the victim's computer, which we've seen. So I would say third would be something related to existing credential compromises. So, you know, reuse of credentials on different sites, and then those credentials end up on the dark web on a database, and then are used to log into systems remotely, such as a VPN, which is five out of the last seven cases were related to compromised credentials on a VPN that we've seen.
Wow. So definitely some underlying themes there for sure. And I know, Alvin, obviously, it's very easy for an organization to be overwhelmed when a cyber attack occurs and to kind of map out what the next steps are. In your kind of experience, what are some of the critical steps that an organization should take in the immediate aftermath of being a part of a cyber attack?
In the aftermath of a cyber attack, definitely what we want to do is isolate the affected systems. There's still an attack that's ongoing, isolation is important because you might have multiple sites. The threat actors might still be inside of the network. So the things that we want to do is really kind of cut the internet access. It's not necessarily that we want to just shut everything down, meaning power off, because you could be losing valuable evidence. So isolation, the first step is really just cutting access from anybody outside into the network and also to any other remote systems or remote locations so that we're really kind of isolating that one environment.
Very interesting.
In addition, there's the activation of the incident response plan. This is kind of where we run into a lot of problems because most people don't have an incident response plan, or the incident response plan that was prepared is not really relevant to the organization. It was mostly put together in order to get cyber insurance. So it's never been really fully tested. It's not really tuned to the organization.
More of a formality.
But if you do have one, yeah, exactly. But if you do have one, it's probably a good starting point because it's going to kick off certain things like communication, extremely important with the affected parties, employees, customers, stakeholders, and not everybody is receiving communication at the same level that maybe the board is going to be receiving it as or the legal team, right? So we have to make sure that we are managing that communication immediately. Your systems are down. You're not servicing your customers anymore. People are going to need to have answers. So you have to have a really well thought out communication plan in order to advise clients, internal staff, and the board, and all the legal and law enforcement authorities as well. In addition, I believe that the data recovery needs to be looked at. So immediately, we know that we need to try to identify a root cause, the patient zero, but the data recovery process needs to be evaluated immediately. We need to begin the process of data recovery, not so much a system restoration, more about analyzing where we are with the backups. We've seen backups that were stored in the cloud be affected. We've had backups be deleted. We've seen that the backups maybe just weren't good. They just weren't ran. They don't have enough retention. So there's a lot of things around the data recovery that we need to look at for the backups or the replications. So definitely starting the evaluation of what the recovery process would look like. So definitely isolation, activating an incident response plan that's accurate and relevant, communication with the affected parties internally and externally and with the relevant necessary need to know information, and then beginning the data recovery process. At this point, you might also have to engage the law enforcement, but in threat, all of these activities, what we definitely want to do is if we have cyber insurance, we want to let them know as well. So immediately kick that off because the cyber insurance, if you have it, first of all, needs to be aware. Second is if you don't have legal representation, they will assign you a breach coach. And through all of the different areas that we're talking about, it's really good to have the legal representation there to just be your voice or the sounding board or just listening in on all of the activities that's happening from the incident response standpoint. Extremely important.
Excellent. Some great guidance there. Thank you for that. Alvin, we really like to get past theory at times here at the Cloud Lounge. Would you be able to kind of share with us a specific incident when an organization was able to successfully navigate and survive a cyber attack? What were their kind of key factors in their success that you can share with us?
Absolutely. A better way to answer that question is that I think it's to pull a few different scenarios from different incidents that happen and picking out the factors that really helped to speed up the recovery, because it could be weeks, if not months, sometimes. And in one case, what I can tell you is that segmentation is extremely important. So segmenting your network and making sure that you're not running a flat network is one of the things that we've seen has saved a significant amount of time for the recovery, obviously reducing the downtime, but allowing the systems to be segmented, extremely important. The other key success factors are that you had a really solid incident response plan, but that's rare, actually, but we've seen it. And when you have a really solid incident response plan, you know what to do. You know who to communicate with. You know who your vendors are. You know where your backups are. You've already tested this out and you know how to fire up your systems for recovery.
Excellent.
Organizations that had their environment in a SaaS environment, not on-prem, the on-prem is what was targeted. The critical data was in a SaaS environment. Companies that had SaaS solutions seemed to recover the fastest. Those SaaS solutions were typically protected with multi-factor and had geofencing or some sort of conditional access policy around them. Companies that had really robust backups and recovery mechanisms, specifically systems that were ready to be fired up in the cloud in ransomware events, extremely helpful in terms of reducing the time to get operational again. Security awareness training, that's another one. So security awareness training for employees. So I'll focus a little bit on the business email compromise or a account takeover. So the propagation of a business email compromise or an account takeover could affect internal employees. It could affect one or it could affect multiple. And what we've seen is that some employees that had a really strong security awareness training program were the ones who actually flagged the user as a potential breach or a potential account takeover. But that was because they kind of knew what to look for in terms of requests. So may not always be evident, but requests can come from a employee that's been compromised to another internal employee. The same thing goes, we're talking internally, but the same thing goes for somebody who was really well trained, security awareness training, that's outside the organization. Those people can detect those attacks as well, minimizing the impact, meaning minimizing how long the account takeover is happening.
So, Alvin, I think it's easy to get kind of caught up in the technical remedies and how we would respond, but I'd love to hear from you. How does the other side of this look like? So how does a cyber incident affect the financial, operational, and reputational aspects of a business?
It depends. If you have cyber insurance, typically the costs are going to be covered. I say typically because, as we all know, there's incidents where you may not be covered from, could be negligence or lying on your application for the cyber insurance. You had MFA, but you didn't really. It depends, definitely. Regardless, where does the cost really go? So the cost goes definitely in direct cost to the actual incident response. Typically, you're getting involved with forensics analysis and specialized teams and tools in order to do this. You have legal fees, definitely, that are in there. Again, if you have cyber insurance, these are typically covered. They'll assign you a breach coach. But if not, then you're going to be on the hook for those legal fees, definitely. There could be regulatory fines. So if there's specifically in Quebec with Law 25, C-27, these things are going to add up very quickly. You could also have costs related to having to supply some sort of credit watch through Equifax. So you have those kind of fees as well. Operationally, it will disrupt the business definitely and lead to downtime. You may not be able to use those diagnostic equipments that are used to daily operations, which means that you're not going to be moving business through, basically, right? I say diagnostic equipment, but it could be anything, ERP system or your core line of business application, whatever it is. The other side of it is what I mentioned at the beginning, operationally, and something we don't talk enough about is that it affects the people that are working, the employees, often you're sent home. So there's a financial impact there on the individuals working at the organization. And they're maybe not taking home a paycheck that week or those few weeks, which is not uncommon. So that's a problem, definitely. And it's something that we definitely strive to avoid. The reputation of a business is definitely going to be eroded to a certain degree, trust among customers, partners, the direct cost related to the actual incident response. Typically, that could be around 250 hours or more, and you're ranging anywhere between $200 to $500 an hour for those types of forensics. Legal fees, I mean, everybody knows what lawyers cost, breach coaches, regulatory fines, the fines for things like credit watch for clients or victims, we'll say, definitely add up. Operationally, disrupts definitely the business, the processes, leads to downtimes of your systems. You can't service people, so you have employee loss of time, but you also have the employee themselves who is maybe not pulling in a paycheck, the reputation, the organization. So trust among customers, partners, internal stakeholders, definitely. That's going to affect you on the medium and long, well, short, medium and long term, right?
And I want to touch on something you just mentioned as well earlier, which was Bill C-27. This is, as some might know, a kind of a draft privacy law. I'd love to hear from you, what is Bill C-27 and how this will potentially affect businesses in Canada?
Being more based towards the East and familiar with Quebec and the Law 25, the C-27 is coming in as more of a federal version of that Law 25. And it's there to replace PIPEDA, right, which is the current law regulations that we have. In the high level, because in Law 25, I mean, there's over 100 provisions that we need to adhere to. So I'll take some of those concepts and kind of bring them over. But at the high level really is the type of personal information that you have in your control, how you use that personal information and the consent that you get for that personal information. And that could be very wide. Even receiving a job application on your website needs to have some sort of privacy component to it, saying, hey, by the way, we're collecting information. You have your cell phone number or your email address. I've got your whole entire job history. So it's not just about it related to business. Well, it is related to business, but not in terms of the information you're collecting from a customer. Also could be for potential candidates. And I mean, we talked about two scenarios there, but it can go very wide, very quickly. It often does. How you make those decisions about how you're going to retain that information and whether or not even you're going to be moving that information interprovincially between countries, where is it being stored, definitely is of concern for C-27. And I think I mentioned like the retention period, but how you dispose of it, right? And how are you going to service requests for the personal information that you may have on individuals? That's at like a really, really high level, but wrapped in there is definitely making sure that we make an assessment internally, that we understand what that sensitive information is. When we do an assessment, typically what comes out of it is people just are blown away at how much sensitive information is actually stored in their organization, from emails to SharePoint OneDrive and everything in 365, but also on-premise. The information is mind-boggling. We're talking hundreds of thousands of data points. And so this assessment is going to be extremely critical that, and you're not going to be able to do this manually. So you need to have specialized tools in order to do this, and really specialized tools in order for you to also help you manage it moving forward. So that's going to be a critical component of C-27, is that assessment component of what is the sensitive information that I have? Because for decades, some companies decades, some companies maybe 5 years, right? But throughout that time, before you had this Law 25 and C-27 coming into effect, you didn't really have to worry too much. You had to worry about it, but you didn't have to worry too much about it. So you just stocked things like, you know, stored information, you know, how it made sense for you to work.
Just hoarding content.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So definitely having this assessment and then being able to control it is going to be something that C-27 is going to ask you to do. And this is going to be wrapped up in policy. So another thing that C-27 is going to ask you to do, because your policies, so this is now your retention policies, your security overarching policy, your data subject request policy. Another one specifically, you have to identify how you're going to be able to service these privacy requests. And security measures, that's another component wrapped into this C-27. Is definitely making sure that you are implementing any kind of security measures to prevent any kind of loss of this personal information. So one is, how do I collect and consent and manage and dispose of? You know, that's all under more of a controlled. But what about the uncontrolled? Because we're talking about cybersecurity. So when a breach happens, right? So again, going back to having a really solid assessment to know exactly, you know, where your sensitive information is, helps dramatically in a cyber incident. Because when you're in there, you already know, okay, these are the systems that were affected. They are either going to include that area of sensitive information or it will not. And so that will tailor what your response needs to be as well to the public, to your customers, employees also, right? So extremely important that it's all kind of tied together. So having this assessment of understanding, implementing security measures, and then the incident response component being able to lean on this information in order to respond effectively.
Absolutely. No, it sounds like businesses have to be much more vigilant in what content they store, where and how they actually store it as well.
Absolutely.
So finally, Alvin, I'd love to have you leave us with some kind of final words of wisdom, if you will, kind of best practices, key takeaways, recommendations, anything that you'd help, that you believe would help the listeners with their kind of cybersecurity planning or strategy.
So definitely the key word here is invest in a comprehensive cybersecurity strategy. That includes prevention, detection, and response. The invest component is extremely important. What we're typically seeing is that we can give you a roadmap, but if we don't get the investment, both in terms of the intent from board, the direction of the company, the highest members of the company, we don't get their buy-in, then nothing's going to move forward. So definitely invest in comprehensive cybersecurity strategy that includes prevention, detection, and response, which means the board buy-in to basically fund the activities that are going to need to happen to reduce the risk of the organization. Definitely regularly updating and patching systems. This is something that we're okay with, those Windows updates, but we need to go further and make sure that we are assessing vulnerabilities at all different softwares that are installed on systems. So the third-party softwares as well, and just general vulnerabilities and configurations. So yes, patching firewalls, Windows systems, but making sure that we have a program that's capable of identifying potential vulnerabilities, not just related to patches, but based on potential configuration errors, extremely important. Training employees, best bang for your buck, hands down. The cost to implement a cybersecurity training program for employees versus the value you get from it, you yield a very high value from every dollar spent. Continuously monitoring, assessing. So it's not a drop it in and you're done. So whatever program you end up investing in for your strategy needs to be ongoing. Really good example of that just has to do with access control. So continuously making sure that the people that have access to the system are the people that have access to the system. So this is just an ongoing continuous monitor. We think about monitoring for potential events that are happening, but also just making sure that access control is included in this continuous monitor, make sure that the people who have access are the people who need to have access and the permissions that they have are the right permissions that they actually need. It's something that's often forgotten. I rarely see it being done, by the way. So, and in about, I'd say half of the cases that I've seen, the credentials that were used were credentials that somebody had set up for a test or somebody had set up for this customer to do this thing, but then did not remove it. So these regular reviews are extremely important. Yeah, making sure that you have an extremely, extremely strong backup and recovery. And I would go as far to say that we're usually typically focused on our, when we have on-premise system that, you know, we're backing those systems up, but the system's in the cloud also. So we have a false sense of security when we move our data into SaaS systems that it's being handled. Often case, yes, part of it is handled. That's part of why you go to a SaaS system is because they have backups. Their contracts with you may not meet the needs of what the backups are that you require as an organization. A good example is Office 365, right? And so that one is often forgotten and definitely needs to have a supplemental backup strategy on it, but it could be something for your ERP as well that's hosted in the cloud. So investing in comprehensive security strategy and making sure that the board buy-in and it includes prevention, detection, so making sure anything is happening that we are seeing it, and the response. So we see detection happening, but response is kind of lagging in terms of the timeliness to address certain things, and that's typically a problem. Regular patching of updates of systems, and both for known vulnerabilities, but also for the configurations of systems. Training employees, continuously monitor and assess the posture are definitely takeaways that I would give to somebody. Definitely collaborating is another big takeaway. We seem to think that we could do this all on our own. Even as an MSP, I need to collaborate, and that's where we get our success, right? Is when we're collaborating with other vendors, even other MSPs. So what an organization is looking for is really guidance. Collaborating with an MSP, gathering information will help you to make your decision. It's an ongoing process right? That we need to, for preparedness, where the key is effectively defending against these threat actors.
Thank you for that information, Alvin. And again, thank you for joining us at the Cloud Lounge podcast. We really do appreciate your time.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
The effects of a cybersecurity incident on an organization really can be devastating. We're talking about lost revenue, tarnished reputations, legal implications, and not to mention, as you heard, the potential effect on the employees directly as well. And with what we've heard today, taking a proactive rather than simply reactive approach to cybersecurity can't guarantee you're safeguarded, but it really can help with ensuring a smoother recovery and return to the path of business as usual. I would like to again thank our guest, Alvin. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. Until next time, this has been the Cloud Lounge Podcast. Take care.